How do you know when to take your losses and when not? That's a very important
Excellent question. So there's an investor and a trader, and those are two people often ask me, are you an investor or a trader? An investor usually is for the long term. And you think you're going to be right over 20 years? You might be wrong over 2 years, in which case you can take the volatility and say, you know, it's almost like a beach trade, they call it. I'm going to invest in it, I'm going to go to the beach and come back, and it's going to be fine, but there's going to be a lot of volatility in the meantime, but I don't care because it's money that I don't need now. But if you're a trader, if you're buying Bitcoin because you think at 105,000, there is something that's going to happen. There's a catalyst or something that's going to go to 107,000. You need to go in and out. And if it goes to 103, and it could be because it's a momentum trade or whatever, I'm not good at that. I'm not a trader. And you need to know what you are better at and not. But you learn over time that if things are not going your way, stop being so blue sky and optimistic on something that you should not be.
We are delighted to have Michael, investment manager for the past 2 decades, join us on Lessons for Life. Welcome, Michael. Great to have you.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. You come from Gibraltar. You've been in England. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing and how you made it to become an investment manager.
So, as you said, I'm from Gibraltar. Grew up there, born and bred. A community that was very proud in its Yiddishkeit. We walked around as little kids through Main Street with kippot. We were very proud Jews. Went to a non-Jewish school at the age of 12. Everything's changed now. But we had our little group in the year of 150 or so where the four of us, we brought our sandwiches with kippot in school, and we were very proud Jews, brought up as very proud Jews, strong identity. And then came over to London after Yeshiva, a couple of years in Israel, and have worked here, for the last, reveal my age, 55. So
55. All the fives.
So it's a good one. Trained as a chartered accountant and then went into investment management over 2 decades, investing in equities and private equity, et cetera, and it's been great, Baruch Hashem.
The world's changed a lot over the past 2 decades since you've been in investment management. And you come from Gibraltar, so you've got that Mediterranean kind of outlook as well. It's a unique community over there. I'm sure we all know about the family. Baruch Hashem has got a prestigious past. Take us through a little bit how has your past, your parents, the education you received as a young Jew in Gibraltar had an impact on your life, if any, going on your successful life as an investment manager? Focusing on your work?
Good question. I'll answer it with one word and I'll elaborate. Emunah. My father, Rav Shalom, taught me, as my mom did, Me'avishrim, the importance of just understanding that everything comes from Hashem. No matter what, good and bad, everything comes from Hashem. And he got it from his father, etc., etc. And I think that in my industry, where you're buying a stock, for example, where you've done all the research and you think you know that you're right, things can go wrong for a while. Stocks can move in the wrong direction and you've done all the work. And a key skill, I think, or characteristic of a good investment manager, not that I'm good or not good or whatever, but something I've learned over the years, is that you have to have belief in yourself, but that is supported and buttressed by support in you knowing that you've done your ishtadot, you've done your work. So emunah is, I think, key in everything in life. But in my work, it's taken me very, very far where I know I've done what I could. I believe in what I've done, knowing that, you know, I've done everything possible. And therefore, I leave it in the hands of the real partner here, who's God. And that helps tremendously.
I think what you said, that was the most incredible thing, because the real partner is God. So I say over a story to my students that there was once a guy who wanted to invest in a house that was across the river many years ago. And he said, I'm going to speak to the rabbi. He came to the rabbi and he said, Rabbi, should I invest investment manager. Should I invest in this house? The rabbi is looking. He says, what kind of investment is this? Well, I'm going to do it up. It's a cross. It's a broken down factory. I'm going to bring these workers. This is cheap. This, I'm going to do this. And I reckon I can make 5 million on it. So the rabbi looks and says, I have to think about it. After a few days, weeks, the rabbi says, no. So guy continues his work 1 year, 2 years, 5 years down the line. He's coming to the synagogue and he meets his friend. His friend does a big kiddush. Said, what's the kiddush? You marrying somebody? He said, no, I just sold. What did you sell? I sold this factory. Remember, there was a factory over there. I bought it. I did this and that. You know, I went to the rabbi for advice and he told me to buy it. And Baruch Hashem, I made 7 million. The rabbi, he told you to buy it. He didn't say anything. He went to the rabbi, knocks on the door, gets into the rabbi. But he calms himself down. He says, Rabbi, do you remember that I came to you for advice? He says, yes. He said, well, you told me not to buy it. But to him, you advised him to buy it. So he says, how come you advised him? He made 7 million. It could have been me. The rabbi said, there's a difference. He said, what's the difference? He said, the guy that came to me, the other guy, he's got a big partner. He said, but I also have a partner. He said, no. When he came to me and he asked me advice, he said, Be'ezat Hashem, please God, I intend to bring these workers. With God's help, I intend to put this amount down. With God's help, he kept on mentioning God. And because he kept on mentioning God, so he brought God as a partner. So when you say that God is our partner, that's like key to all investment management. That's from a rabbinical perspective.
Huzzah.
So I think, tell us a little bit about any interesting kind of deals potentially that in the past 2 decades and how they are transforming the investments going forwards. Like obviously now it's all about AI and technology, but 20 years ago it was probably different. And what do you have to do? You have to go out into the world and meet a lot of people and they see you around as a Jew. Tell us a little bit about what kind of investments you were making in the past and how you interacted as a Jewish person making those investments.
I live work-wise in the non-Jewish world. And I think it's a huge privilege to do so because I work with a kippah. As I said at the outset, I've always worn a kippah. And everyone in my industry who knows me knows I'm Jewish and very proudly Jewish. That has led to a lot of interesting things over the years. Amongst them, you know, a lot of people say to me, oh, with a kippah, you know, it's a non-Jewish world, strongly non-Jewish world out there. And I appreciate that in today's age, for the youth that you deal with, it's a different world to the world I grew in, or at least a different overt world in the overt anti-Semitism that we've seen since October 7th, etc., which I had not experienced then. But obviously, it's the same people still, but just expressing themselves in a different way. So, but for me, over the years, it's been incredible how, for example, in conferences I go to, like 20 conferences a year, we invest in venture, in crypto, in private equity, in the hedge funds, and long-short equity, macro. It's a very diverse world of investments that I look at. There are people over the years that have come up to me. I had no idea, but because, you know, at the coffee break, I'm wearing a kippah, people will come up, you know, Chicago Jew, who came up to me, didn't identify, but somehow felt a connection. And at the coffee break, we started talking. From there, lots of good things led from that. He would not have known if he felt a connection. My daughter got married 9 months ago in Israel. Amongst the guests that we had was a guy who lives in Dubai today, who is not Jewish, but always felt, you know, a strong association with Jews, or always felt. We developed a strong relationship over the years. And there he was at my daughter's wedding, 25 years on since we'd met at a work. And for me, I say to my kids all the time, if you can be a Kiddush Hashem at work, if you are the Jew who, like this guy in Dubai, thinks when there's October 7th and he's sending me WhatsApps all the time, you know, I'm with you guys, etc., because he's had those good interactions over the years, there is no better feeling, because that is I see it as my objective in my workday is obviously to make money and to look for good investments. But on the periphery, all the time, you have to be aware that you could be a walking, you know, Kiddush Hashem, or Chas V'Shalom, a walking Chilul Hashem. And that's the downside, by the way. You wear a kippah, you are a proud Jew, but be extra careful. I hope that answers part of the question. Yeah.
Brilliant. 100%, 100%. And so tell us a little bit about the previous decades ago. What kind of things were you investing in? And now, what kind of things?
You always have to be ahead of the time. So I started training as a value manager, looking for value. What is cheap? So the stock is trading at 4x earnings when most stocks are trading at 8x earnings. Why? Is it a value trap? And therefore, you have to understand why or not. So that my first 10 years of my career was training in what is cheap and should you buy it? Because cheap can be cheap always. Mm. And therefore, you want to stay away from cheap if it remains cheap. If it's cheap because of a reason, but there's going to be an inflection and the company is going to change, then that's a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. Then over the years, and I started investing in the late 90s when we had the internet boom, where you have now the AI boom, we had the internet boom. So there was a lot of investing in the internet at the time. You know, I'll talk to you about the good investments, one of the better investments. I can also talk to you about quite a few bad investments. But I'll start with a good one, was Amazon. Like in the late 90s, I remember thinking, you know, gosh, we can order something online. This was at the start. And people said to me, but they're losing money. There was a hedge fund manager in New York, where I'm actually seeing very soon in New York. And he is much cleverer than me. And he and I debated this for years, and he put it in a letter years later. And he said to me, Michael, you're investing in the biggest not-for-profit company out there, and you're going to lose your pants. It was Amazon. Mm-hmm. And we had the whole debate on it, because he was much smarter than me. But he was a real value guy. And he was saying, look ahead, as we say, what's the pasuk? I need your help here, Rabbi. Ezehu chacham, not the
Ezehu chacham.
Haroet anolad. Haroet anolad. And in investments, it's very important this, and often you get it wrong. But if you see the nolad, you see
what means. If you see what's happening in the future, if you try and see what is the ramifications, etc., anolad, that's that which will be born.
Well, that would be exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That is a wise person, because you can see what's coming to you.
Exactly.
That's very difficult.
You can definitely be wrong. So in Amazon, we saw the Nolad. The Nolad was they will take over e-commerce, mm-hmm. and everyone will want to buy. Mm. I can tell you many other mistakes. So that was 20 years ago. And then over the years, you have to stay, you know, ahead. Investments, you're competing with the world. The beauty is you're sitting here in London, and there's a guy in Wall Street, and there's a guy in San Francisco, and there's a guy in Shanghai, and there's a guy in Brazil. And a lot of people are looking at the same investments because we're, and sometimes you think, why should I be doing this? Like, why am I any better, any worse? But first, it's fascinating. It's really amazing. And I encourage anyone who wants to look at the investment management industry to spend some time because it's very worthwhile, because it's intellectually very stimulating, mm-hmm. and you learn a lot and you meet a lot of people. But you have to be prepared to lose and to know when to walk away. I've had trades that have gone wrong. I invested 15 years ago when I thought I had an angle because I'm from Gibraltar. So I know, when I grew up in Gibraltar, had family Morocco, not real family, but we originally came from Morocco, mm-hmm. 100 years ago. There was an investment in Tunisia in a chicken poultry company. And I thought I had the connections, blah, blah, blah. And we invested in that. We lost quite a bit of money, like 30, 40% loss. And that is, right partners. Again, mm-hmm. go back to what we said before. We did not properly diligence the quality of the partners, and we were let down. And you think you have an angle, and right on the land, I saw the wrong land there.
How do you cut out? How do you know when to take your losses and when not? That's a very important question.
Excellent question. So there's an investor and a trader, and those are two people often ask me, are you an investor or a trader? An investor usually is for the long term. Usually you're buying, to use the early example, Amazon, and you think you're going to be right over 20 years. Mm. You might be wrong over 2 years, in which case you can take the volatility and say, you know, it's almost like a beach trade, they call it. Like, I'm going to invest in it. I'm going to go to the beach and come back and it's going to be fine, but there's going to be a lot of volatility in the meantime, but I don't care because it's money that I don't need now. And I think that, but if you're a trader, if you're buying Bitcoin because you think at 105,000, there is something that's going to happen. There's a catalyst or something that's going to go to 107,000. You need to go in and out. And if it goes to 103, and it could be because it's a momentum trade or whatever, you need to cut your losses, as you said now, Robbie. I'm not good at that. I'm not a trader. And I need, you need to know what you are better at and not. But you learn over time that if things are not going your way, stop being so blue sky and optimistic on something that you should not be. A lot of biases one has that you try and always find reasons to justify, you know, they call it, one of them is confirmatory bias. That even though you bought something and you think that, I don't know, it should be worth 100 and the stock is at 90 and the stock is going to 85 and you're looking for evidence to confirm that 110 is the real value. Well, that is, you're kidding yourself sometimes. And there are many biases. You know, I recommend people read books like Thinking Fast and Slow, etc., to understand this a lot better. But you have to be very careful. And sometimes you get sleepless nights and tell you over COVID, we weren't just worried about, you know, COVID. We were worried about the stocks collapsing and the world collapsing. And if you held airline stocks and hotel stocks, or what did you do? So it's not an industry for the faint-hearted, but it's overall worthwhile.
How do you take the Gemara that tells you shilish, shilish, shilish? You should divide your investments into a third, a third, a third.
Which one? Remind me, what should always have a third in cash? A third in cash?
Into land and a third into trade.
Okay, good, good. That you I haven't had that one for a while. And perhaps I should have known that for longer. so I should have spoken to you 20 years ago. So shilish in cash. Well, that's interesting because if somebody pays,
doesn't mean necessarily cash. It can also be like something which you can take out easily. So it can be that you can readily available.
Yeah,
it liquid. Can be liquid, an investment that's liquid.
Basically. So it's very, very good. It's an excellent point because I'm a big believer that if you don't have enough liquidity, the shalish cash, as you said, that, and hopefully that shalish is generating something like in today's world when interest rates like. Until 2021, 22, interest rates were almost zero.
Mm-hmm.
So that shalish of cash was harder to generate a return. But today, you can get 4 to 5% in US dollars, pounds, etc. So I think, and especially when you have a market like we have now that's expensive, we can discuss that another time, you want to have a ton of cash because when there's a crash, that's when you make real money.
Mm.
So the theory is very right to have liquidity, a shalish in cash. Shalish in land, again, that's for, I don't have the expertise in property to be able to say to you, it's a thing that I have applied because I haven't, or I would apply because asset allocation is different. But I think you can apply that to land. I mean, we own companies, I own land, I don't know.
And look at your house of the past 40, 50 years. Everyone over here, my parents bought their house 50, 60 years ago for under £100,000, whatever, could be worth $1 million now.
Yeah.
And it's just generally, there's always an increase and it's much more than inflation.
Yeah, no, look, property, long-term investment, property is always good. I'm not talking about myself personally.
Houses on the moon.
So I invest for others.
Right.
So when I look, it's interesting, you know, investment managers usually are not very good at managing their own money because they're so focused on the clients. No, it's not that. It's just you're so focused on your clients that at the end of the day, you just think sometimes, you know, if I do well for my client, then automatically I will do well, etc. And then but sometimes they're very bad. And it's happened to me on occasion. I think to myself, my wife will often say to me, why haven't you invested in that way? And you just sometimes just don't do it. But look, I think liquidity is extremely important. We saw that in the financial crisis 2008. Those who didn't have it suffered. Those who didn't have it in real estate and the real estate crash of 2008 went bust and had to hand the keys. So I'm a big advocate of liquidity at all times, but managing that liquidity smartly is extremely important. And then
so when would you say is the time to go down on your liquidity? You said there's be a crash. That's a great time to invest. How do you call the crash?
So COVID was a perfect example. You went all in. I mean, COVID, the market fell in 4 or 5, I don't know, in a week
or two. But you had to wait. Yeah, you had to wait. You didn't, let's say the market falls 5-10%. Did you go in straight to then? Or did you, it's very difficult, obviously, to always time the bottom. Correct. You don't have to time the bottom, but you have to be near the bottom to actually kind of make it.
You never catch the bottom, and beware of a falling knife. You know, as I say, you know, you can't catch a falling knife, but you have to start. You have to have sort of, if you know the market, for example, let's say the market is trading at 23 times earning now 22 forward earnings, looking at the S&P, and you know average is 18, over long-term 20 years historic average. Mm-hmm. Not sure if these numbers are accurate, but broadly right. So you say to yourself, well, when I get to an average, I'm already okay. I'm buying at the average. I'm going to generate 8 or 9% annually. If I'm going below average and you are prepared, you need to, you know, then the long-term return, the compounding return is going to be better. Like, as in COVID, if the market often gaps down, doesn't, you know, you can have 2 or 3 days when the market will fall 20%. Those are the great moments usually. And then you have to see, is this time different? And beware of that expression. This time is different. Usually it's not. You know, the market, you know, the history repeats itself. It's not quite exact, but it rhymes.
All right.
So you need to look at and see it.
Interesting. Now, focusing on the next generation, you've had a lot of experience. You've been working in the industry for 2 decades. You are an international person. You go to all these different conferences. What kind of a message can you give to a young student nowadays, given your perspective of life? What is it somebody that wants to go out there into the working world, perhaps wants to be an investment manager, or just wants to know from a Jewish perspective, a Jewish idea? Imagine your son, your daughter, what do you tell them?
So from a Jewish perspective, as my wife often tells me, she's a big fan of Rav Sacks, Alav Shalom, but Jonathan Sacks has said, non-Jews respect Jews who respect themselves. I completely believe in that. And the non-Jew sees how proud you are being a Jew, gets it, he respects it. So be a very proud Jew out there, but know that that comes with a lot of responsibility. You are hoisting the best flag that exists, the Jewish flag. It is a huge privilege, and with privilege comes a lot of reward, but with it comes a lot of responsibility. But embrace it, because it's wonderful. So that's the overall message. Wear the Jewish flag, the kippah, wherever it is, with a lot of pride and responsibility. And second, just more broadly, for investment management, is that what the Rav is asking? It's not easy. It's getting harder. You've got, for example, AI, as the Rav asked before. Today, you can go and chat GPT and pay $20 a month for a feature called Deep Research. We put any stock idea, any company into Deep Research, and I can ask it at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday to research an idea, and I will get a 45-page report after 15 minutes that is better than I could ever have done, and most of you will ever be able to do, certainly in that space of time. So what you're encountering now, it's a much harder, but it's also a great opportunity. And don't be sort of put off by AI. I can't get a job in investment management because AI is doing it better than me. I don't believe that at all. What AI is going to do to you is going to make you super productive. So you're going to do, in 20 years' time, 5x or 10x what I'm doing now. So therefore, the question is, but people are going to recruit fewer people, and therefore you have to be top of your game. So if you're going to go into investment management, it's already hard, it's going to be harder. But hey, if everyone thinks the same way and people are going to be put off, what you're going to get is fewer people applying because of the fear of, no, it's impossible. Well, it's not impossible, because you will need the combination. What's going to happen is, you know, at the top level, you're going to have the investors who know how to use AI as my work partner often says, and he's completely right. He says, the trick with AI today is knowing what to ask. And because, you know, AI, anyone can use AI, but you need to ask the right questions to get the right answers. And to ask the right questions, you need to know, you have to be the human who, you know, as they say, garbage in, garbage out. But chokhmah in, chokhmah out. So it's really about you being the guy who is like completely passionate about the industry and being the one guy who gets the job. Who, by the way, if you do get that job, you're going to do a lot better than we guys have ever done, because what you can produce with AI as your partner and with Hashem as your ultimate partner, it's just formidable. So embrace it.
This guy's what you remind me when you say that you just got to know how to ask. V'kan haben shoel, by Pesach, the whole of Pesach, what is it surrounding? Questions. Why is Pesach surrounding questions? We don't have the same questions on Sukkot. We don't say, why is this night different than all the other night? We don't get the kids saying, man ishtana on Sukkot, not on Shavuot, only on Pesach, because Pesach is when we became a free nation. When we became a free nation, now we go out to the world. And up to then, 210 years, we're slaves. We don't have knowledge. We're not yet entrepreneurs because we've been working for other people. Now that we can go out, we need to learn how to ask and what to ask. And when we learn what to ask and how to ask, then we can flourish. And that's Judaism. Judaism doesn't like shy away from questions. We want people to ask because we have answers, but people have to know how to ask. One of the biggest problems in our generation, people are not asking. They're just going on rote. Oh, he's doing that, she's doing that, so we're going to go onto the road and we're just going to copy. But the clever person is going to ask questions, and that's going to bring it out.
Spot on.
That's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Spot on. That's the opportunity of the next 10 years.
So it's a beautiful, we're in a blessed generation. We're in a blessed generation. We've had a lot of transformation in our lives. Even the past 5 years have been crazy, from COVID to the wars that are going on, to the economy going down and the cost of living, etc. And taking that into account, you mentioned the emunah. What advice would you give to people that want to strengthen their emunah, their faith? How do I strengthen my faith nowadays? What should I be doing? What do you do personally that strengthens yourself and your mission in life?
First, I daven every day.
You're praying every day.
I pray, and I'm religious about that, in the sense that 3 times a day I need time out to pray to the Almighty.
Morning, afternoon, and evening.
I am very focused on that, and it's also a good sort of time out from the obsession of work.
And the most powerful time to pray is Mincha. The afternoon.
Why?
Because that's when you're the busiest. You don't have the time. Yeah. And you've got meetings, but you dedicate that time to God. That's the most powerful time.
We work in Hampstead. Our officers are there, and they're lawyers next door to us. And we have a minyan over the winter at 1 o'clock, and we make it a point, and we every now and then struggle, but most of the time we have a minyan, and it's such a pleasure to see everyone leave. You know, we have a WhatsApp group, and this happens all over the country and all over the world.
We opened the second branch in London Bridge in Tooley Street just in December time. We started a WhatsApp group. We have 60, 70 people that are on, and they're coming from all over. They're coming from KPMG, the Ernst & Young. People are coming to be part of a minyan in the middle of the day. And you meet a lot of people, and everyone's coming to do what? To pray to God. It's fantastic.
And by the way, it's also great networking.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, other people have got time. Even if it's as you're walking out with somebody, you say, oh, what do you do? And this and that. And it's that network that is so powerful. And you're getting...
We had people with PwC and ENOI all together. It's fantastic.
So yeah, praying is key. I'd say another thing I think that's key to me, and I've noticed this through my work all the time. Like, I missed a great stock opportunity. I'm saying this because it's live and it's hurting me, but it's true. Because Hashem is sending you messages, and don't miss them. And believe me, the last few weeks I've gone early to shul. Seriously.
God is speaking to us. We go to synagogue to speak to God, and God always speaks to us. And there are hints, and we have to open our eyes.
And we can't be oblivious and say, oh, God isn't speaking to us. God is speaking to us. God exists now. And we have to believe that God is speaking to us. And we know there's a famous Shir Lamalo that we say, and when we're praying, King David in his Psalms, he says, Hashem tzilcha al yad yiminecha, God is our shadow, al yad yiminecha, through our right hand. What does it mean that God is our shadow? How can God be our shadow? We are the shadow of God. We are nothing. What does it mean God is our shadow? Because when you lift your right hand, and the shadow comes, the shadow right hand also lifts. You lift your left hand, it lifts as well. God is saying to us, what David HaMelech is saying is, the way that you act is the way that God will act towards you. Midah keneged midah, like for like. And so definitely, even if you got the wrong kind of message, I don't think you got the wrong message, because you are your personal self. You know yourself better than anything else. Maybe that is something that we need to look into. There's many reasons, obviously, where other reasons outside. But if you've honed into one, you can only gain, because you're improving your servitude of God. So I think that's fantastic.
Michael, it's been a real pleasure to get to know and to understand what kind of things that you're doing and the impact that you're having across the community, and to really portray some lessons for life to everybody out there. Is there a final message that you would like to tell the people out there to pass on to the next generation?
Well, first, thank you for inviting me. Thanks to Will Benatar for the suggestion. Actually, he's the kind of guy.
He is the backbone to this entire project.
So Will,
I don't know if he wants to be mentioned, but
I don't know if he wants to mention. So if not, you can remove it.
Otherwise,
but he's the kind of young guy who's impressed me with the answer I'm going to give you now, because I think that's the answer to your question, the one answer, and that is passion. Be passionate about whatever industry you choose, and obviously be passionate about your Judaism. And if you're passionate about whatever you do in life, the chances of success are much, much higher. And you only get one chance in life. I remember speaking to Rabbi Tatz about 30 or so years ago when I was, just after university, and asking him about the industry to go into, because I was training as a chartered accountant. And he gave a share, I remember. And he said it very clearly, and he was 100% right. He said, go into a room on your own with a blank sheet of paper and draw a circle. And inside that circle, just put what you're really good at, because there's not many things that we are good at, but there are one or two things that we are. So, and it's not a lack of another to recognize what you're good at, and then hone in on that. And if you're good at whatever it is, at networking or analysis or whatever, then find an industry where you can shine. Because if you use your natural skill sets, and then, from there, you can build enormously, and you're going to love it. This is 10, 12 hours a day. I mean, choose a career that you're going to love. Rav, you're a Rav. Look at the passion you have. Hence the success of Tal. You have to choose something that you love. And I'd say and embrace whatever you do with passion. And as the Rav said before, and if you make a mistake, no problem. Be American about this. If you fail, fail early, because you have other chances again and again. And don't be embarrassed of any failures. Stocks, you get something wrong, you move on. Because you only have to be successful 70%, 60%, even 55% of the time. And life is like that. We're going to make mistakes time and again. But as long as you are learning from those mistakes and you're getting better, you'll make the most of life.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your words of wisdom.